You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Conference USA Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. Joe Lonergan and Eric Henry here with you once again to talk about last week's USA slate, preview next week's slate, and talk about some hard news finally on the realignment front for CUSA. Sort of anyway, but Eric, how was your weekend?
Definitely a busy weekend. Started out with FIU on Friday, made it back to Tampa on Saturday, and enough time to check out the majority of the Conference USA games. So we're looking forward to talking about what wasn't quite a full slate, but definitely had its entertaining moments. I know you and I will talk about that in a minute. Outside of that, can't complain. It's October here in the Sunshine State, so we're finally getting to, you know, the 60-degree weather at night.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Normally, if in years where we don't have a heat wave that, you know, kills half the plant life or whatever in Oregon, that's typically what we're dealing with most of the year. But now we had a frost advisory last night. It's starting to get cold and dark and depressing, and I love it. That's why I moved here.
You know, it's funny, really quick. I know we got a lot to talk about, so I won't, you know, prolong this. I am that weirdo who loves gray skies and cold weather, or cool weather. I don't mind that, but I know that's, and listen, I don't want to be insensitive to people who I know, like, that is their trigger, but I've always said that I could handle Seattle. What got me was when I was in Chicago and we had 28 straight days of not cold enough to snow, but that cold rain that just comes down on you as you're walking to the, you know, subway station, it's overcast. That's what got me. But if you just give me like overcast outside, you know, it's 60s and 70s, I'm good with that. So just me, I'm a weirdo.
No, I mean, I don't think you're too weird. I think a lot of people like the overcast vibe, especially myself and my fiance. Someone made the joke that we were like, you're like the Addams Family if the Addams Family was really into college football. Like, that's like, that's the vibe.
I was going to ask, like, is that very, like, you know, grungy of us, like Nirvana, you know, early 90s, just kind of gray feeling? Or am I, did I just impress you with my Ranger, sir?
The fact that you know Nirvana? No, that
no. All right, that's cool. That's
everybody knows. Everybody knows Nirvana. Right, I mean,
right. I'll think a little deeper next time.
Fair enough. Speaking of, you know, football and all that, we should probably dive into some of that talk at some point. Let's start with the game that you were at on Friday night: Charlotte beating FIU 45-33. Eric, FIU would not go away in this one, so I commend them for that. Every time it looked like Charlotte was going to put this one on ice, FIU would make a big play here or a long pass there to kind of stay in there. Definitely something of a duel between Chris Reynolds and Max Bortenschlager as they each finish with four touchdown passes. But, you know, you were there. It's interesting that it turned into this type of contest.
Yeah, Joe, and I will say this game wasn't quite as close as maybe the score would have indicated. If you take a look, it was, what, 31-14, something like that, entering the fourth quarter. And then, you know, Charlotte, I don't want to say they let their foot off the pedal, so to speak, but you could tell. You just look on the sideline, Joe, that program, they hadn't beaten FIU once in five tries, and they knew the win was there, right? And I think, I don't want to say they celebrate too early, but they kind of just, you know, all right, 15 minutes, let's get out of here, injury free, and kind of get back to Charlotte and start the celebration. And then FIU, spurred by, you know, Max Bortenschlager's program record, 466 yards, four touchdowns, one interception, put up a little bit of a run there in the fourth quarter. But yeah, this game was not as close as the score may have indicated. Got to give credit to Chris Reynolds. I made a point to profile him in my three things we learned about Conference USA, Joe, because again, and this is completely a pun on him, so I am not making fun of him being short. I am 5'10", so I'm short too. but I said that he stood tall in the face of competition. They go out and they get the quarterbacks from Central Casting, whether it's Brett Keane in 2019 or James Foster coming in this year. But yet Chris Reynolds stands tall, and he is the guy who leads them to victory, 21-27, 4 touchdowns. Nice homecoming for Miami native Vic Tucker, 8 catches for 92 yards, 5 sacks from the Charlotte defense, and most notably, Joe, yeah, for anyone who watched this game, I didn't get a chance to hear the post-game interview because obviously I was in the press box, but I saw that the graphic that ran across the screen, Joe, was Charlotte holds FIU to 72 yards rushing. Why was that notable? And they talked with Will Healy in the postgame. They had come into this game being the 128th ranked defense in terms of stopping the run in all of FBS football. So I thought if there was going to be any game that FIU could bounce back with Devontae Price, it would have been this game. They were not able to. Post-game, Butch Davis, you know, pretty much, I don't want to say upbeat, but he said that, hey, our guys are ready to get back to work on Monday and try and stop the slide. At this point, I mean, how true or false that is, listen, I don't expect him to come out in the post-game and say, hey, oh, yeah, the guys are crushed. You know, I don't expect him to do that. So we'll see how they're able to bounce back as they head to the bye. And I had a chance, shout out to Tom Whitestone, the SID at Charlotte, who was always more than accommodating whenever we need anything at this site or just in general, happened to provide the post-game audio, the post-game Zoom for Will Healy. He was surprisingly subdued, Joe, for someone who's normally, you know, and we don't know how he was behind closed doors, but in terms of the post-game Zoom, he talked about the fact that they didn't close him out in the fourth quarter and they still were some mistakes to clean up. I believe they had 7 or 8 penalties, if I'm looking at the numbers correctly. Definitely, you know, some they left some points on the board. But all in all, if you're a Charlotte fan, you got to be pleased. You move to 4-2, still first in the East, and you defeat FIU for the first time in program history.
100%. You know, with Coach Healy, you definitely get the feeling that he's a perfectionist. And when you look at what Charlotte was able to do in this game, they played phenomenally for 3 quarters. And then in that 4th quarter, definitely started letting FIU get a little too comfortable with the idea of a comeback. I believe it was 20-7. You know, performance at the close of the game maybe gets a little bit uneasy, but at the end of the day, they are, you know, still a one loss team and still undefeated on CBS Sports Network.
And Joe, really quick, didn't you say that, you know, as we transition to the next game, I got to sneak this in, that there was some Jagged Edge sung by Chris Lewis and Dante Whitner?
There was. That was nice. They were talking about one of Will Healy's assistants recently got married. So they broke out in their rendition of the Jagged Edge song, Let's Get Married, which was quite nice. And I love that broadcast team, too, by the way. They have some really fun chemistry. Basically, the whole game, when things would, you know, there was a timeout, things would get into a lull, they would turn to each other and basically like scheme ways to get into Club Lit at the end of the game. They were like, all right, what if you this wasn't one of them. It was like, what if you stand on my shoulders and we put on a trench coat? Like, you know, just trying to like come. It was really silly and really fun. And I'm all for them getting more CUSA games.
I'll just quickly piggyback off what you said. Chris Lewis, I know that was Dante Whitner there. Typically, he's teamed with, come on, safety, who's escaping my name right now, Corey Chavis, and then Justin Walters is usually doing the sideline. I've had a chance to watch him a couple times this year. Great broadcast, so completely agree.
Let's move on then to Marshall and Old Dominion. Marshall won a close one, 20-13 in overtime. Old Dominion continues to show how close they are to a breakthrough, just was not in the cards this game. Both defenses were constantly giving their teams chances to win, and they just could not pull it off until Grant Wells finally broke through in that overtime period.
Joe, before I give my thoughts, I definitely want your thoughts on this one, because I know we've talked a lot about Marshall, and you know we'll come to them in a second. I definitely want your thoughts on the Old Dominion situation. I had a chance to watch the majority of that game live, listen to it because I couldn't get the Facebook feed to pull up. Ted Alexander, Andy Mayshaw do a great job. ESPN Norfolk 94.1. But really want your thoughts just on ODU and what you've seen so far before I kind of go.
Yeah, you know, they remind me of like UTEP last year, sort of, to some degree, where they were just right on the edge of starting to get good. I think Old Dominion is going to bounce back in a big way next year. But for right now, they're just like they're just out of sync a little bit. They just can't quite get over the edge and, you know, come through in those big moments, which is kind of to be expected. You know, when you had as long of a layoff as they did, this is Ricky Ronnie's first real year at the helm. And, you know, it's a lot of guys who maybe haven't had as much of a chance to develop the kind of chemistry you need to win on a consistent basis at any level of football. So I'm not all that surprised, but I think they have something good going there with the way that they are playing. They just need to actually close games out.
Joe, I will give a shout out to my guy on Twitter, Nick Popejoy. He kind of, you know, called me out and said that it would have been nice to have my three things focus on another game outside of just one, which was FIU and Charlotte. Two of my things came from that game. And I told him, I would have profiled ODU had they won. To piggyback off your point, just not enough playmakers just yet, specifically on the offensive side of the ball. And I think not enough confidence to get, specifically to your point, Joe, about how they kind of remind you of UTEP. It's one thing to want to do it. It's another thing to have seen yourself do it, right? So you can mentally visualize, we've been in this scenario before, and we can pull it out. For a lot of these guys, having not played football, you know, last, you know, they chose to opt out. And then the lack of success for the past few years for the guys who have been with the program for a couple of years, they just haven't seen, you know, to kind of use the analogy, the ball go through the net, you know? And that's really what happened in this game. DJ Mack, as he progresses and gets more time and gets more comfortable in the quarterback position, not that he's not an experienced quarterback, and, you know, he's done it his entire life, but, you know, this is his first real starting experience. He just couldn't make enough plays down the stretch because, as you mentioned, the defense, the ODU defense, extremely impressed given the fact that they lost Keon White and Caleb Port Dement in the offseason. Did a phenomenal job. Grant Wells, the first pick was one that was tipped off the receiver's hands. The second pick, completely on him, an ugly pick. And we'll come to Marshall after that. But that defense continued to make plays. Roger Craig did an incredible job. For a guy who's 5'8", 5'9", one of the, you know, freakish athletes in CUSA, for him to kind of do a great job on Corey Gamage, 6'3", 225 the entire game, was phenomenal. But you could just tell down the stretch when they couldn't put them away, and especially when Ricky Ryan, I'm not being critical of his decision per se, but he kind of settled, was like, all right, we're going to take the 58-yard field goal, see if Nick Rice can hit it. He was not able to. That sent it to overtime. It just felt to me like, okay, the momentum's shifted enough. They've left Marshall enough of a window, enough of a door to kind of, you know, get back this one and close it out. And obviously they were able to do that when Grant Wells found Willie Johnson, the 53-yard TD pass, to tie up the game. And then, of course, they won in overtime. So I saw Charles Huff post-game, and he said he was, you know, proud of the fact that his team didn't quit and found a way to win. And that's all true. But I think I was more impressed with the way ODU fought, being a three-score dog.
Yeah, the fact that they were able to put up that type of fight, like you said, is admirable. And had they not been basically fighting against a defense that's had like 24 sacks this year, then I think DJ Mack would have had a little bit more, you know, been a little more comfortable in the pocket in order to kind of pull his team back earlier in the game, as opposed to having to rely on your kicker at the end. Because as the NFL Sunday slate taught us, this was not the best weekend for kickers, with the exception of Texas A&M. With that, then, let's talk about UAB and FAU. Blazers win that one 31-14. UAB defense shut out the FAU offense in the second half. Two passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown for Dylan Hopkins. Other side, three interceptions for Nakobe Perry, which obviously doesn't do anybody any favors. We saw a little bit of Nick Tronti in this game as so. With the Blazers, they keep rolling, still looking strong, and I'm proud of Dylan Hopkins for being able to do what he's done in this spot. And it seems like in this game in particular, he was able to clean up a lot of the mistakes that were starting to concern us when he first took over the reins.
Yeah, this is one I had a chance to watch start to finish all the way through. I was very impressed, and I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter or on the interwebs, as we like to call them, that the FAU kind of feeling from their fan base is, oh, well, we're the more talented team, and if we play that game 90 times and 100 times, we'll win 90 of them, and we just had a rough day. And listen, I think FAU is the most talented team in CUSA, but trying to sit there and dismiss, you know, kind of summarily dismiss the win for UAB, that's a complete discredit to the job that Bill Clark has done. Eight sacks. They held FAU to 1.6 yards rushing. Of course, the sack yards played a part in that, but guess what? Johnny Ford didn't really get anything going either. And one of the things I heard is that, oh, if Nakosi Perry doesn't throw the pick six to Grayson Cash to kind of close the half there, that was really the momentum switch, that FAU had scored twice. They had scored touchdowns on two straight drives. If they get points there, you know, they're going to make it tough on UAB. Well, Joe, you know this as well as anybody. We can play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game with damn near anything as someone who covers FIU. I've heard a lot of that over the past 13 games. But to give you an example that's germane to this game, UAB scored 7 points to open the game. They scored in their opening drive. And then when they got the ball back on the pick, Nkosi Perry was trying to hit Zaire Mitchell-Payton, was picked off. Jermaine Brown Jr. dropped a little swing pass heading to the end zone. If he catches that, it's 14-0. And guess what? FAU's having to play from behind a little bit earlier than the second half. So you can do the coulda, woulda, shoulda thing all you can. UAB won this one. This was not a matter of FAU losing.
To quote Trent Dilfer from a couple of years ago, you cannot lose games and still win. It's not the best, but it applies. It applies. Yeah, with FAU, I don't doubt that they're a talented team, but when you look at this game, the fact of the matter was you had UAB's, you know, defensive front seven, who are, if my memory is correct, they're the most experienced in CUSA. It's all juniors and seniors. Going up against an FAU offensive line who's A, not as experienced, and B, just really didn't have it. And that ultimately is why we saw the numbers that we did. We saw 8 sacks. We saw them be a constant presence in the backfield. And that just shows you experience wins you games in that regard.
Absolutely. I mean, again, you talk about the offensive line for FAU. You know, the guys up front, Nick Weber and Desmond Noel, those are talented guys. But, you know, UAB, as you mentioned, that front seven is very experienced. And even the secondary, the fact that they were banged up in the secondary but still managed to make plays, very impressive.
Absolutely. You know who else was impressive this weekend, Eric? Malik Willis, once again. When you look at what he was able to do against Middle Tennessee State on the way to a 41-13 win for Liberty, the score line may not reflect it, but the MTSU defense did give him some issues in this game by picking him off three. 450 total yards for that Liberty offense in this game. The big issue for MTSU here was 35 total rushing yards on offense, and that is just simply not good, no matter what your offensive philosophy is, as they are still clearly trying to figure out the kinks with Chase Cunningham at quarterback.
Joe, I will not go extended on this game because I'm just going to be repetitive, right? Yes, Liberty did go up 14-0 early, so that really kind of takes away any effort to run the football. However, let's run them down. Shaitan Mobley, 4 carries for 8 yards. Brand Anderson, 3 carries for 7 yards. Is he a running back? Is he a receiver? We still don't know yet. DJ England Chisholm, 1 carry for 5 yards. That's a receiver. Frank Pizant, 3 carries for 5 yards. Martell Petway, 3 carries for 4 yards. Chase Cunningham, 6 carries for 4 yards. It's just, you know, listen, I'm just going to get repetitive if I start going in and saying that, you know, Rick Stocks still want to establish a running identity with 1 or 2 backs, and clearly still doesn't have that just yet. Again, like I mentioned, you go down 14-0, it's tough to establish that, but still. All in all, Malik Willis was going to win that game regardless, but I really think the rest of this season, I mean, what is Middle Tennessee right now? They have 2 wins, if memory serves me correct, 2-4. So it's not inconceivable that they can still qualify for a bowl game with a nice little stretch, but they're going to have to get things squared away with the run game.
Yeah, it's interesting with Stockstill, with the amount of persistence he's shown in trying to establish MTSU's offensive identity as a running team. It's difficult to do that when you run the ball like 15 times over the course of a game. Like, that's not going to get you very far. I understand that they're playing from behind, but still, if you go into that game more or less accepting that it's the Malik Willis show, you might as well try to use that opportunity to get your guys snaps and get better at this thing that you want your team so desperately to be good at, right?
Joe, as I've said, and as you've said, Rick Stockstill's forgotten more football than we'll ever know. We're not questioning his football acumen. But we've talked to enough players, I've talked to running backs, who've said, just like quarterbacks, sure, you know, you're going to rotate him in and out, and you want to have a depth, you know, a stable. But they need some rhythm, right? And I almost said Martell Petway. Shaitan Mobley came off of the 100-yard game last week, and he had 20-something carries. It just feels like if you're going to get the most out of your run game, you got to settle on 2 guys and be like, these are my 2. And then if I need, you know, a third back who, you know, maybe does some things well in the pass game or whatever, cool. But the handful of carries for 7 different guys, just, I don't know. You know, again, Rick Stockstill's forgotten more football than I'll ever know, but it just seems curious because this is not just a 1 or 2 game blip. It's been this way for the better part of 2.5 years.
Absolutely. And like, if you are one of those running backs that's, you know, in the back of that log jam at the position, and you don't crack the top 2, 3, whatever, that's why the transfer rule is what it is now. You can go find somewhere else to play. But I don't know. Great. Rick Stockstill has forgot more football than we'll ever know. Blah, blah, blah. Move on. And then we'll have Missouri beating North Texas 48-35. Not an altogether terrible performance from North Texas here, honestly, but they really had no answer for Mizzou's rushing attack, with Tyler Beatty averaging 12.8 yards per carry on 17 carries. That's 217 yards on the day for those of you trying to do that quick math in your head, plus two touchdowns. So, you know, for North Texas, nobody expected them to win this game. Certainly not you or I, Eric. But, I mean, I feel like you got to be relatively happy with the offensive performance here in terms of being able to keep pace with a team that's definitely heating up with Mizzou here.
Yeah, my major takeaway is maybe Austin Ani is the guy. And I know that when you're betting on the 28-year-old dude, right, it is what it is. And I know that Jace Reuter – listen, Austin Ani was a talented player coming out of high school 10 years ago. And that's not a joke. The reason I laughed is Joe chuckled as I said that. It wasn't meant as a joke. It was just meant that while Jace Reuter is a talented kid coming out of high school, it's not that Austin Ani was lacking talent. You know, he's just 28. But maybe he's the guy, right? Maybe he is the guy for the rest of this year. And then you let Jace Reuter kind of settle in, and he'll still have, you know, some eligibility left, and you figure that out as time goes. But as you mentioned, defense still an issue for UNT. And I mean, we can probably talk about this later on in the offseason, but again, not looking to critique Seth Littrell per se, but damn, this guy probably could have, you know, I'm not going to say he could have named his Power 5 job, but he certainly had a handful that he could have been in the running for. And now, definitely back into the rebuilding process there at Denton.
As the kids say, he fumbled the bag, I believe is the expression. But what else was I going to say about this? When you were talking about Ani being 28, it's interesting how sports in general warps your perception of age. Right. Because I remember watching, Ken Griffey Jr.'s last few years in baseball, for example, and he was like in his third play, the oldest player in the league. It's a miracle he's still walking. He's 33 and now 8. And I'm like, oh my God, like, am I going to die soon? Like, what? But no, I mean, it's in terms of North Texas's offense, I've been saying Ani's the guy from based on, you know, his performance compared to the other people in that quarterback room. So it's a little bit, you know, too little too late right now for North Texas for that really to mean anything, but solid enough performance for them, I guess, even despite the loss.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And then we have Southern Miss losing to UTEP 13-26. Miners take care of business, 158 yards in the ground for Ronald Awatt. Southern Miss as a team netted 15 rushing yards. So FIU, not the worst rushing performance on the day, Eric. And that had something to do with Jake Lang getting minus 32 rushing yards in this one. So look at that. The Miners are one win away from bowl eligibility. All their improvement definitely showed in this.
Joe, we can talk about Southern Miss another time in terms of some of their struggles. And we, you know, I know both of us, I know you were a little bit more bullish on Golden Eagles than I was. I thought they may have been in line for a quick turnaround given some of the narrow losses they had last year, but we can save that for later on. It is October 12th, and the UTEP Miners are not only talking bowl eligibility, they are one win away from bowl eligibility. The contract extension should be on Dana Dimmel's door. In his office, on his desk, whatever, you know, idiom you want to use, immediately. Gym center, write it up, put it there. I know you said you guys weren't there yet in the offseason. He's there now. Couldn't be more impressed. And yes, I understand that three of the teams that UTEP has wins over, they didn't play football last year, right? So I understand you still, listen, you can say it's smoke and mirrors. And if you want to talk about them being a division contender in the same way we look at UAB and UTSA, that's a different discussion. But the fact that they're winning the games that they're supposed to win, and you couldn't say that about UTEP football seemingly since when? 2012, whatever the last time they qualified for a bowl was, It's been a long time since you could say that. So I know you and I were really excited and fired up to see what the Sun Bowl may look like this weekend, should they have the opportunity to clinch bowl eligibility. And that I'm intrigued about. The only thing as far as this game, I'll say on the field, Gavin Hardison, a 7 of 17. Don't want to see that, because that reminds me of not only necessarily him from last year, but kind of like the Kyle Oxley era UTEP Miners, especially against Southern Miss, a team that struggled defensively. So don't want to see that. But all in all, Ronald Awatt, that's just another discovery to have what a 1-2 punch. Him, Deion Hankins, Cordarius Wadley. So there's enough talent. Just want to see what this upcoming week will look like. And my big takeaway is kudos to Dana Dimble. Great job for UTEP.
Yeah. With Coach Dimmel, first of all, there's a reason that he is in contention for Conference Coach of the Year at this point. And the fact that he's got them to this point where they are more than likely going to make their first bowl game since 2014 is extremely impressive. You know, aside from that, if we're just keeping it focused on UTEP, I'm fascinated to see what they're able to do, because like you said, their schedule up to this point hasn't been super difficult, but you know, it hasn't been that difficult the last 3 to 4 years either. And we were still seeing them, you know, lose games they should have won. So that's just another mark of improvement. But now that they have Louisiana Tech next week and the rest of their conference schedule still to play, I'm fascinated to see what their true potential is here. Cause you know, we have our assumptions, but truly we don't know until they play the games.
Tech, Rice. I just ran down the schedule yesterday. Now, of course, I'm forgetting. I know they have UTSA and UAB left. So those two are the ones that you say, okay, maybe they're not there yet. But listen, excuse me, if they beat Louisiana Tech, if they're able to beat the Rices of the world, you know, able to beat UNT, then maybe we can use the UTSA and the UAB game as the litmus test. Now, I don't think they're there yet, just as a complete team, but at least it'll be a good measuring stick to see where we are against the quote-unquote big boys, right? In a year where you know it's not going to be 42-10 at halftime. So definitely would be interested to see how the rest of the season plays out for the Miners.
Absolutely. And to close off the recap of last week, let's talk about UTSA beating Western Kentucky 52-46. Everything that Western did in this game, UTSA just did better. Zappy threw for 5 touchdowns. Frank Harris threw for 6. Jareth Stearns caught 2 touchdowns. DeCorian Clark caught 3 touchdowns. And it just goes on like that if you run down the box score for this game. And really, it was the late interception by UTSA's Clarence Hicks in the red zone as Western Kentucky were driving to try to complete the comeback. But ultimately, it put the win on ice for the Roadrunners. So UTSA reached bowl eligibility with this win as they improved 6-0. And look, Jeff Traylor so far is my personal pick for Conference Coach of the Year so far. With what he's been able to do in getting this team to play to their full potential is amazing to me.
I'm going to yield my time to the gentleman from Portland. Joe, what were your thoughts? I mean, I definitely want you to elaborate a little bit more. Was this the one, as you were watching it, I know you had a chance to watch it, was this the one that you were like wondering, okay, if we get this one, and sure, big ask to beat 5-0 UTSA, but is this the one where you're like, if we beat UTSA, I feel so much better about everything else the way this season has gone? And the second part of that question is, given the fact that they pushed UTSA to the brink, does that at least make you feel more comfortable with a remaining stretch that features ODU, FIU, Middle, Rice, and, you know, Marshall/Charlotte, which are still kind of finding themselves?
Sure. I think they will beat FIU, Middle, Old Dominion, and Rice.
Okay.
So again, based on what I've seen out of them so far, I think they're going to finish 5-7, which is frustrating. That being said, keeping it focused on this UTSA game, this is exactly what I thought was going to happen. unfortunately, it is. With the way that Zappy's playing right now, Eric, he is on pace to not just have the best season that a Western Kentucky quarterback has ever had. He's on pace to have the best season statistically COSA has had since Case Keenum when he was at Houston in like 2010 or 11. And yeah, just based on when I talked to Jared Kalmus on Alamo Dome Audible last week, and I basically told them, like, look, Zappy is going to find Jareth Stearns in particular for a lot of these deep balls, and when their UTSA safeties inevitably prevent him from reaching the end zone after catching the ball at UTSA's, you know, 30, 40 yard line, whatever. And then that forces Western to set up in the red zone. They're going to make mistakes. And that forces either A, your defense to get in positions where they do something stupid and get a turnover, or they force them to kick field goals as opposed to touchdowns. And that's exactly what happened, especially when you go down into like the late part of this game and the interception that ultimately, again, closed it out. That's exactly what happened. They got in this position where they needed to like push Bailey Zappe to the absolute like brink. Like, he's playing fantastic, but their whole game plan is like, hopefully he'll do something like superhuman and we'll be able to walk out of it with a win and our defense won't have to contribute at all. And that's not how football works. You know, for whatever reason, unfortunately, this defense is playing in slow motion. Like, it looks like, I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and you know, bash them or whatever, because I'm sure they're at some level they're trying their hardest, but when they're playing out there, it's clear that there's a very big gap between them and some of the other defenses, even just in this league, which is frustrating given how special Zappe is statistically proving to be.
So I kind of knew the direction we were going to go in, which is why I wanted you to go first. Forgive me for being stubborn. I went on the Roost podcast with Matt Bartlett. Great listen, by the way. Great TUSA podcast. As we went and just kind of chopped it up around the league. And Matt made a point to me, which he said, even in the East, and I view it the same way he does, Charlotte, if you look at their wins, they beat FIU. They beat Duke, barely. And then the rest of their wins aren't very impressive. And they lost at Georgia State and gave up a ton of yards. So, yes, I'm not poo-pooing on Charlotte as much as they still have a little bit more to prove. We've seen what we've seen from Marshall up and down. FIU, no. ODU, no. Middle Tennessee, no. Matt made a point that you could look at the East as FAU versus whatever Bailey Zappe's able to do if you're not a believer in Charlotte. And I'm still cautiously optimistic. Here's why. I want to give this young lady credit. Excuse me. I say young lady affectionately. I didn't literally mean young. Hannah Page on Twitter. She's a good follow. She's at Hannah, H-A-N-A-L-E-I 91. She does a lot of stuff for UTSA, Western Kentucky Rivals, and is very good at stats. So she contributed this one. Let me go and pull it back up here. I just had it. I want to make sure I got her Twitter handle right. It's that UTSA's success rate in the run game is around 40-something percent, right? They had a success rate of 75% last Saturday. So for those of you who may not know what success rate is, I know Joe gets it, right? It's essentially on first down, if you get 40% of the yardage needed for a first down. On second down, if you get 60% of the yardage needed. On third down, you get 100% of the yards needed, right? That defines their success rate. The fact that UTSA, why do I keep saying UTSA, dear God? The fact that Western Kentucky still able to do a decent enough job on the ground in terms of success rate, right? Now, I know that runs contrary to what I've been saying about their overall rushing totals per year. I'm still holding firm to that. But one of the things that I noticed in the UTSA game, Joe, is the air raid does force opposing defenses to essentially say you're only going to commit five people in the box, tops, because you have to cover the rest of the receivers. I think that can get them the wins you mentioned, to get them to five wins, plus one over Charlotte and or Marshall. And then if they beat FAU, who knows what happens? Joe, I don't think this is a year that the winner of the East is any more than a 7 or 8 win team, to be honest. And we saw that in 2018, if memory serves correct, with Middle Tennessee. So listen, I'm just saying, it's going to take a run, but I'm not completely down on Western Kentucky just yet.
I guess my only rebuttal to that is, yes, the Western Kentucky running attack was improved in this game. That being said, they're still allowing more than 38 points per game. And you can say that's inflated by playing, Michigan State and the other tough teams that they had to start the year with. But that already, like, that, you don't want to put your quarterback in a position where he has to throw 6 touchdowns in a game in order to even keep you alive at the end. That's not sustainable. It's not fair either. And it's mathematically way more difficult than if you were holding them to even like 10 less points. And, you know, that's a touchdown and a half, really. And that's my thing. It's like, you're all Division I football players, and obviously there's a gap between Michigan State and Western Kentucky. But like with this UTSA game, it's all more or less from the same recruiting pool. So like it should have, and it was close, but it didn't look that way when Western's defense was on the field, unfortunately.
You know, I know we're going to transition to a lot of the realignment talk after this, but I think the point that you're making is a fair one, in that if there was one defensive stop to be needed, you would think that Antoine Kincaid and D'Angelo Malone and Juwan Jones and Brathwaite and one of those guys will have to come up with to be able to make a play to get the one stop. And in this case, it was UTSA's defense that got the one stop needed.
100%. Look, UTSA's defense was clutch for sure. And I kind of knew that about them going in. This UTSA team, to put this back onto them and get off my, you know, my pity party for Western Kentucky. This team is phenomenal. They have everything going for them in terms of talent, momentum, and confidence, truthfully. So I guess that's a decent enough transition to jump into some alignment talk for the middle section this week. So earlier this week, Conference USA Commissioner Judy McLeod basically proposed her solution to the whole question of what is going to happen to Conference USA amidst all of the realignment talk that's been circulating the past several weeks. And she sent a note to Commissioner Oresko over at the AAC that basically both the leagues would essentially dissolve. The remaining schools would then form two new leagues, new branding, new names, everything. But they would form in a way that makes more sense geographically. You know, for context, part of the solution was like SMU, North Texas, all of the Texas AAC schools left would more or less be in the West alongside Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech, etc. And then some of the other schools, Western Kentucky, USF, FAU, FIU, would be in the Eastern Conference, along with, I believe, two additions to be named later. And if I had to put money on it, one of those is going to be James Madison, but that's not what we're talking about right now. So it's interesting. I don't know that this is necessarily going to be what's going to happen, but it's an interesting thought from Commissioner McLeod.
Joe, before I give you my thoughts, I just want to ask you this.
Sure.
I appreciate the effort by Judy McLeod. And unlike a lot of people in the CUSA, you know, landscape, and maybe it's because I don't have a true rooting interest and I did not go to any of the schools in CUSA, mm-hmm. I am not a Judy McLeod basher. I genuinely believe when the initial realignment happened in 2013, I don't care if it was Judy McLeod or whoever you want to put, could have been RIP David Stern, you know, as commissioner. There wasn't much left. But with that being said, there's no real reason for the American to accept this, right? Like,
no, and I'll echo your sentiments. I like Judy McLeod as a person. I really do. That being said, from the interactions I've had with her, she's been extremely kind. That being said, I don't think this is a great idea. I don't think I like the idea of it, but no, I don't think that the American is going to jump on this. Would I love to see, you know, some of these schools realigned so that it actually makes sense geographically? Because let's make sense. Neither the American or Conference USA makes sense geographically right now. They just don't. It makes about as much sense as like Oklahoma and Missouri being in the SEC, but that's another conversation. Yeah, I don't see why the AAC would say yes to this. I don't blame you know, Mike Oresko for turning this down when that inevitably happens. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it kind of feels, I mean, there's going to be some solution because it's impossible for nothing to change with everything shifting around the way it is. But it almost feels too little too late for COSA to make this kind of move when you know, the dominoes that have already fallen have done so. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So that's why, and I was kind of shaking my head as you know, kind of brought it home. Listen, I think the idea is damn near the best thing that Judy McLeod and the people over there, you know, in Frisco could have come up with, quite frankly. And I know that, Jim Delaney is also helping out there, the former Big East commissioner. I know he's helping out, you know, as a advisor. But just to give the listeners an idea of what it is, I'll read it verbatim. The Western Conference would be SMU, North Texas, Rice, UTEP, Southern Miss, Tulane, Tulsa, Louisiana Tech, Wichita State, UAB, Memphis, and UTSA. The East would feature ECU, Charlotte, ODU, Temple, Marshall, Florida Atlantic, Florida International, South Florida, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, and then two new potential additions that Joe mentioned. Geographically, these are both great leagues. And I think from the CUSA side of things, it's the best they could do. Just from the American, though, and let's, for all intents and purposes, or, you know, for bleeps and giggles, let's call the Western Conference the American in this case, right? They're taking a hit. Well, yeah, they gain UTSA and UAB, and they gain the traditional schools from CUSA and Tech and Southern Miss. I still don't see any reason to go North Texas, Rice, Wichita State, unless, you know, you're trying to sweeten. And this is where I got to say, from Judy McLeod's point of view, she's doing the best she can. You're not only trying to appeal to them in terms of geographics, you're trying to sweeten the pot as far as basketball is concerned, right? That's all Wichita State is. It's a joke, quite frankly. It's a pretty appealing basketball league. when I'm looking at it here, I hadn't thought of it that way. It's not a bad basketball league. But yeah, there's just no reason in my mind. So I'll say this, because I know we probably want to get a little more into maybe what, you know, the future holds, or at least, you know, just kind of given this idea, maybe some of our own ideas. But I did want to throw this out at you for, you know, a quick laugh. I don't know if you saw my tweet earlier today that I said, hot take, put me in the CUSA, in the version of CUSA that has better food, so I'll be in the East. You can have all your Texas barbecue, okay? There's only so many times I can eat Texas barbecue. I get to go to Philly. I get Hattie B's hot chicken, which is severely underrated twice by proxy of Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee. Norfolk, I've heard, has pretty good food. I haven't been there yet, but I've heard it has decent food. And then I get all the flavor that South Florida provides. Joe, I'm winning in the East, right?
You're not wrong. That is no shade at Texas barbecue, but you need a little variety in there. And while it is unfortunate that Wichita State doesn't have football outside of Ted Lasso, it's for context, Derek, in the first episode of the show, when he moves from football to soccer, he's the coach of Wichita State's football team, which doesn't exist, which is why they could probably do that from a rights perspective. Anyway, I don't see why the American would agree to it. But yes, the East definitely wins in terms of food. What kind of struck me when you look at the added context of Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated's article on the issue now, here's a quote from Judy McLeod when talking about realignment from a few weeks ago. She says, there's so much insanity, McLeod says, of the latest realignment, basically referring to like Texas and Oklahoma leaving and whatnot. And she says, of her proposal, this is worth a shot instead of continuing to perpetuate the insanity. Our presidents are willing and would like to have broader conversations about it. We can't do it alone. I don't know really how to take that quote, because, you know, if she is kind of feeling, you know, the heat from all the changes and, you know, basically being forced to adapt very, very quickly, I don't blame her for feeling flustered. That being said, when you have quotes like this floating out there, it you know, it's, I don't like saying it, but it reeks of desperation, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you mentioned it reeks of desperation, but I mean, what else are we going to call Conference USA at this point, but desperate? And I know that's tough for us to say as two people who cover Conference USA, but we can't sit here and bury our head in the sands either, Joe. We know the fact of the matter is this: when you look at the Sun Belt and you look at the American Conference, who's the odd person out? It's Conference USA. So again, I've said this. I don't care if it was David Stern or whoever, you know, Paul Tagliabue or whoever you want to consider was the best commissioner of modern times. You know, I won't throw Roger Goodell in there because I'm good Lord, that man gets booed everywhere he goes. And he's having a tough week, but, you know, that's a podcast of the time. Listen, there just is not very many options Judy McLeod had. So listen, as I said, I think given the landscape and the layout of what's there, it's the best you could put together. I just don't think there's any real reason for the American to look at that and say yes, outside of maybe if you can get all the presidents on board, right? Maybe you get 50 or 60 of the percent of the presidents on board and say, hey, from a geographical perspective, we can save money. We're not necessarily losing out from their perspective. Maybe that can sway the tide. And I think that's the only way it can sway the tide. It's going to be at the college presence level. It's not going to be just, you know, Keith Gill saying, oh, yeah, this is fine, or Mike Oresko saying, yeah, this is fine. But I just don't see any reason why there's the incentive for them to do so.
I don't get that either from what has been put out there about this proposal so far. Like I said, it might unfortunately be a little too late for COSA to be like a major player in the conference realignment conversation right now. What's next? I don't know. Yeah, so with Conference USA, we'll just have to see what the next few weeks bring. And, you know, hopefully people other than UAB don't get left in the dust. So we'll see.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With that then, I guess let's jump into some previews. First off, on Friday night, we have North Texas hosting Marshall at 7 o'clock Eastern on CBS Sports Network. The Thundering Herd minus 11 heading into this game. For me here, I know Marshall has their issues, but I don't see that North Texas defense really being able to contain Marshall. I think it'll be close, but you know, if Marshall can get Rasheen Ali going in the run game and he corrects the ball security issues that he's had the last couple of weeks, I think they'll be fine. Furthermore, this Marshall defense has been quietly eating quarterbacks alive this year with 24 sacks, which puts a big wrench in what North Texas likes to do.
Joe, I will keep it short and sweet. I don't think there's any reason to think that North Texas will be able to stop Rasheen Ali. I think he's due for, you know, another excellent performance. And quite frankly, I think the entire Marshall team will find a way to, you know, really bounce back from the ODU loss. That'll kind of shock their system a little bit. And they'll want to go out and show that there's a reason that most people pick them, believe it or not, to win the East this year. So give me the Herd.
Yeah. And then we have on Saturday to kick things off, Old Dominion hosting Western Kentucky at 3:30 Eastern on ESPN3. Tops are minus 12.5 in this game. I do think the Tops bounce back somewhat with a win here based on what we've seen out of Old Dominion. Defending the pass, not their biggest strong suit. That being said, you know, obviously with Western Kentucky, the passing attack is their only strength at the moment, but it's a very, very strong strength. So, I see them getting a lot of points and winning this game, even if, they give up, you know, a career day to DJ Mack, as they've done with every other quarterback they've faced more or less this year.
I've talked a lot about the Tops on this podcast, so I'll save this portion for ODU. I do think Western Kentucky wins, but Blake Watson had a really nice game last week. The 26 carries for a buck 68, didn't reach the end zone, but had a nice game. Be interested to see how he can fare against a run defense that, as Joe has noted, has had their struggles. The defense has had their struggles overall. And can DJ Mack find a little bit more rhythm? He's a guy who, I mean, if there's a definition of a rhythm quarterback, Joe, not just from week to week, but play to play, series to series, it is DJ Mack. So let's see if he can find his fitting, but I think Western does win.
Then in the West, we have Southern Miss hosting UAB, 3:30 Eastern on Stadium, UAB minus 16. Look, with the way that this UAB defense is playing and really putting all of that experience and just like raw strength on display, I am, you know, very confident in saying that they're going to beat Southern Miss. You know, with Southern Miss, it's you can't really pin down like one in particular thing that they're doing wrong at the moment. And, you know, unfortunately, when you go up against a team like UAB that's this complete, it's going to be a tough day for Southern Miss, unfortunately, for them.
Yeah, no real reason to think that the Golden Eagles will be able to fare well against UAB. That's a stifling defense. Looking forward to see if Dylan Hopkins can put together another solid game. I think as long as he's the guy and it's not TJ3, whether that's injury or performance, he's going to need to build on those performances and really get his confidence up if UAB is going to make a run and push UTSA. So give me the Blazers.
Then we have UTSA hosting Rice, 6 o'clock Eastern on ESPN+. UTSA -18.5 heading into this game. We've talked about Rice football a lot over the course of the last few weeks. In the that being said, based on what we have seen the last few weeks, UTSA's defense, I don't know that they're going to allow Rice to do, which is get the running game reasonably in rhythm to set up Jake Constantine to make plays in the passing game, because as they kind of showed last week, they're pretty good at shutting down the run when they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I went very heavy on Western Kentucky as far as the game recap, so I'm going to get into UTSA here. Could not have been more impressed with Frank Harris last week. If I had said to you, Joe, that there was going to be a matchup, a game that was going to go toe for toe between two quarterbacks, and I said that Frank Harris would be able to go toe for toe, you know, dueling out with Bailey Zappi with his arm, you probably wouldn't have believed me coming into this year. But he has shown that not just a dual threat as a runner, he can hang as a passer. And it's been really a treat to watch him develop and stay healthy and make sweet throws, you know, that lefty. It's always nice to see the lefty there make a play. So give me UTSA, and looking forward to see, you know, a quick half or maybe three quarters of work for Frank Harris before they, you know, get out of there with a win.
I would love to see a couple more years of Frank Harris, Bailey Zappi battles, just with like how, you know, how good both of them are as pocket guys. Like it's very reminiscent of like how hyped up they used to talk about Manning versus Brady battles when they used to like go up against each other in primetime. Alas, Bailey Zappi is out of here after this year. And then we have UTEP hosting Louisiana Tech, 9 o'clock Eastern on ESPN+. Bulldogs -7 heading into this game. UTEP winning would make them bowl eligible for the first time since 2014 under Sean Coogler. And look, I'm going to go ahead and pick the Miners based on what I've seen out of them. I think they have the momentum on their side with Louisiana Tech. They have not been playing badly, but they, you know, they haven't been able to play consistently, if that makes sense. They haven't been able to pull off a fully complete game, if that makes sense. I think they're a reasonably complete team, but they have trouble putting together complete games. So based on what I've seen out of UTEP so far, I think they are playing in the right direction. You just need Gavin Hardison to tune things up a little bit heading into this one.
I am absolutely taking the Miners. I can say this. This is what I'm looking forward to in this game, Joe. And you mentioned Louisiana Tech playing inconsistently. Part of that's had to do with Austin Kendall. Of course, he, you know, missed a game earlier this year. But as far as UTEP, it's one thing to do it when you're not expected to. Now the expectation after 5-1 is to win. And they're not the little team that could. People are going to be looking for them. No one's being shocked by Jacob Cowing. No one's being shocked by Justin Garrett. Let's see how they perform. I'm taking UTEP. I think Praise Hamahule and company, especially defensive side of the ball, are going to play a factor. But I think it's going to be a really unique scene to see Miner fans at El Paso kind of, you know, pack the Sun Bowl, and they'll be bowl eligible by the time we're doing this one next week.
I tweeted the clip of it, but Hamahule got a strip sack on Southern Miss's quarterback, and then one of Southern Miss's offensive linemen picked it up. I'm not sure if it was I don't think it was a lateral attempt, or because it would have been a really bad one if so. But essentially, Hamahule sacks the quarterback, sees someone else recovered it and tried to run with it, got up and stripped it again. And then his teammate recovered it, you know, and if he didn't score, he got close to scoring on that recovery. And I'm like, all right, that's the highlight reel play that we're going to see, you know, when he inevitably, you know, gets drafted. Like that is motor on another level right there.
Praise Amahoule has been one of the better defensive players in CUSA for a while now. And now that this team is winning, he'll get the respect. So, yeah, end the podcast on that one.
For sure. Thank you all so much for listening to the Conference USA Underdog Podcast. Once again, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. We're also on Spotify if that's your preferred platform. And of course, at Underdog Dynasty on Twitter, at JOEHIO underscore on Twitter for me, at Eric C. Henry underscore for Eric, and underdogdynasty.com for more G5 football coverage as we get into the second half of the season. Hard to believe we're already there. Happy football watching, everybody. Stay safe out there.